This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly on Bloomberg Radio.
So as Carol mentioned, a lot going on in New York this week. A little hard to get around, but we're lucky that our next guest has made his way to our Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios. He is Justin Whitmore, Chief Sustainability Officer at Tyson's Food, joining us here, as I said, in New York. He's here for the World Economic Forum Sustainable Development Impact Summit, where I got to imagine you've had some interesting conversations, and I got to think people have some big questions for you. This is a new job, I believe, or a new role in a position that didn't exist for a long time at Tyson, right?
Yeah, that's right. We announced this job May 2017, where I became the first Chief Sustainability Officer of Tyson Foods. And you're right, there's a lot of questions at events like this, but also a lot of questions from us, from the group. How do we bring the stakeholders across the supply chain together for a better food future, one that's taking into account the economics, the ecology, and also the employees and the people on the ground? So it's been fun.
Is it possible to have more humane methods within food production while also meeting goals of sustainability? And I think about, just going back, I used to spend a lot of time with the folks at Chipotle before all of their troubles, and they really were trying to kind of find a better way of food production. It gets tougher when the scales get bigger.
Well, you know, I think absolutely, to answer your question, the food, it's actually an imperative for all of us to think about food safety and quality, the health and nutrition of the food, the economic viability, right? Can people afford the food? And it's a job that we at Tyson think about all the time. Our team members, and this is throughout history of the company, are thinking of better ways to bring food to people that's affordable, that's safe, that's high quality. And I think sustainability oftentimes is framed around cost and the difficulty, but there's a whole world out here of consumer interest changing, of new technology that's coming that can allow us to flip that on its head and bring products to the marketplace that people love and that are safe, affordable, and sustainable. So I think it's possible, but it's a massive amount of work ahead of, across a lot of players, Tyson included.
And you also oversee the Tyson Ventures portfolio. This, of course, is the investment arm. So how do you source deals? How do you look at deals? And where are you actually putting money to work at this point?
Yeah, so Tyson Ventures is looking at breakthrough technologies, entrepreneurs that are reshaping aspects of food or our supply chain in new and different ways. And it's one of many levers that we use at Tyson to think about incubating, developing new ideas. And we look at two major levels among many, but the two major ones are sustainable operations in our supply chain and digitally enabled or connected commerce. So how we can bring our products closer to consumers and how they're eating going forward. And our early investments in the fund, which started last year, are in alternative proteins, lab-based and cell-based protein as well.
Is that for feed or to sell to consumers?
The alternative proteins is with Beyond Meat, which is a veg-based protein company. Think burgers, think sausage.
For consumers.
Right, for consumers. And then lab-grown meat, so far out, we'll see what comes there. But it's going to be, at this time, it looks like a consumer option first. But additionally,
is it a side dish, no pun intended? But do you see it something that really does ramp up dramatically?
A third of people roughly right now are consuming more protein from non-meat sources today, and that's a pretty big chunk. Now, the world needs an and. We're a major meat producer. Our core operations, both domestically and internationally, are going to continue to grow. But there's also new segments growing that are looking at protein differently. Mm-hmm. And it's an imperative for us to think about how we can serve those needs. We're going to move with the consumer. And additionally, when you think about sustainably feeding the world, which sits at the core of our purpose, you want to look at all options. So to answer your question, there's momentum there, but I think it's an and versus an or. Mm-hmm. And globally, food players are going to have to think about how we bring a full suite of alternatives to people.
You got a new boss coming in who comes from the meat part of the business. How are you finding sort of the broader conversations as you go in and try and sell this sort of and conversation in a pretty traditional sector, I guess?
Right. I think first, you have to be real. You have to talk to folks in a way that resonates with what matters to them. How is this going to impact their farm, their families, mm-hmm. the customers that they're trying to sell through us to? And I think when they understand that Tyson, at its heart, at our core, cares about our suppliers, cares about producers, growers, the ranchers, then they start to be open to how the global food landscape is evolving. And frankly, that the growth that's going to happen in their business can continue along with growth in other areas. And I think it's that realness and openness in communication is critical. I think a second important factor is that people generally understand that, strategically speaking, Tyson has the capability to deploy so much innovation, R&D. We can bring so many stakeholders together. And our producers and suppliers expect us to do that. There are ideas as yet not understood that we could be bringing back to them through being open to what's new. So I think when they hear that, the waters settle a bit on those discussions. But it is a challenge.
Justin Whitmore, thank you so much. And there's a great story in Bloomberg Businessweek written by Amanda Little about what you guys are doing over at Tyson as you look into different ways, and certainly sustainability ways. Justin Whitmore, he's Chief Sustainability Officer at Tyson Foods, joining us in our Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studio right here in New York.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly on Bloomberg Radio.
So as we round out the show on a Tuesday afternoon, a very wet, congested Tuesday afternoon
yes.
here in New York, an old friend of mine is stopping by the studio, Al Rabel, co-founder, managing partner, and chief executive officer of Kayne Anderson Real Estate. He's here with us in our Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studio. And Carol Masser, he brought a buddy.
Joe Coughlin,
founder and director of MIT's Age Lab, also here with us. In our Interactive Brokers studio. Gentlemen, thank you for being here. So, Al, you and I have been talking for years about what's next in real estate and sort of merging real estate, investment, demographics. We've talked about student housing. Now you've got a different idea. Tell us about it.
Yeah, we pivoted from student housing about 5 years ago, and the vast majority of our investment today is in medical office and senior housing, which has obvious demographic trends. We've got a dramatically aging U.S. population. I think Joe's here because we've got a partnership, and we're looking beyond just pure demographics as a blunt instrument and saying, okay, the population's aging, but you've got technology, you've got behavioral patterns. What does this mean for the future? One of my sayings is that I want to be smart for 8 years and dumb for 2 years, meaning that we want to invest in recession-resistant asset classes that outperform in both good times and bad. And so medical office and senior housing fit that bill, and we've been investing the vast majority of our money in both of those verticals the last 5 years.
And we're all getting old, and we're all going to need medical care.
Yeah, well, three of us here are bald. Carol, fortunately, that doesn't include you. So,
well, you don't know. This might not be real.
We call it the silver tsunami. Jason, Joe, and I skipped the silver tsunami.
Yeah. Straight to tsunami.
Well, Joe, come on in on this, because I find the data that the investment world is using increasingly kind of fascinating, and demographics can really guide you in some really smart ways. We just heard from Al. Tell me about the demographic research that you guys are doing at the MIT Age Lab.
Well, look, demography, as they say, is destiny, but it is not necessarily history. As I write in my new book, The Longevity Economy, the fact is the next generation of older adults expect more. They have more education. They have more wealth. They expect technology. This is not just more housing the way our parents and grandparents had.
Right.
They're expecting new, different, and experience-driven.
What does that mean?
Essentially, they want things to do. Senior housing originally was built around care. Then it was comfort. But now we're looking at community. So there are things to do, things to grow. In fact, the new definition of retirement is simply living and living well.
So, Al, how do you build something that speaks to that and that ultimately has a lot of value going forward and, doesn't cost as much? How do you make money on this?
So on the senior housing side, which we'll address, and Joe brought it up, and I think it's very relevant to a lot of your listeners, we're really looking at experiential dynamics. So as Joe said, the sector, and I think historically, just very quickly, it's about 30 years in age, but really only the last 15 years as a for-profit model. And if you put 08, 09 in there, you kind of had 5 years where momentum completely stopped. So you've got $1.5 trillion sector that's likely to double over the next 10 years in size that really only has 12 years of operating experience. What people want, as Joe said today, is not so much assets, they want experiences. So the sector has morphed, and you've got the baby boom generation aging, which is America's wealthiest population segment. And so you've got people who want Pilates, yoga, in pool and out of pool exercise classes, on-site primary care physician, essentially a full package with alternatives for people. They wake up every day and say, what do I want to do today? Right. And it's there.
But it's kind of like, I feel like what's old is new again. I think about the left rack model going back way back when, and they've done it in Jersey City and Newport. This whole idea of kind of there's so much there to do, whether it's restaurants, places to work out, you know, education for your kids, that whole idea of kind of creating these mini cities. This is kind of what we're doing again.
That's exactly right. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, essentially we're looking for communities that have the intensity and density of activities that we want to pursue.
Right.
Because it's part of being vibrant. It's no longer about stuff. It's about what I can do.
So does it mean that these new developments, and Al, let me bring you back, that they are going to be in urban areas? Is that where you're seeing most of the development that you're doing?
So most of what we're doing is top 75 MSAs, major markets. We recently acquired...
MSAs meaning?
Metropolitan Statistical Area. So we're in major markets. Now that top 75 is a pretty broad range. Last year we acquired a property in Brooklyn, a 16-story building, 21 North Clark Street, mm-hmm. that we're in the process of converting to 275 units of senior housing. It will be a unique offering within the New York metropolitan area, 300,000 square foot building with 75,000 square feet of common area that will be the most high-end senior living in the country. It's got unencumbered views of the East River and Lower Manhattan. And not only that, but as we were talking about before, you're in the middle of Brooklyn Heights.
Yeah,
so
it's an amazing,
you've got a self-contained facility. It's an amazing neighborhood.
Right.
So the reality is that in Brooklyn and Manhattan, you have plus or minus 4.5 million residents. You literally have, when this is completed, 1,000 units. That includes hours of high-end senior housing.
So this is for a pretty affluent crowd, it sounds.
Very
like.
Affluent crowd, okay. Yes.
And how does this trickle down, as it were, Joe?
I think what you see is that, you know, frankly, the lifestyle leaders of any generational cohort, in this case we're talking about the boomers and maybe a little bit older, starts at the very beginning and then starts to, as they say, trickle down or become, shall we say, something that everyone wants a piece of. It's no longer just about the building. It's about where it sits and the activities around it.
Is it only profitable, Al, on the high end of the market?
No, I wouldn't say that. But what I will say is that we focus on the top 20% of each of the verticals in which we invest. So that includes senior housing, but also medical office, student housing. And so from a profit and loss perspective, from a fund perspective, our focus is to be in the most recession-resistant pieces of the asset classes in which we invest. And so there's a broader question which Jason was sort of starting to get to, demand driven. How do we house all of the seniors who need senior housing,
right, that's what
not
I was
just
thinking.
Today, but 10 years from now, 15 years from now. I will tell you that we are invested in trying to find solutions to that. Our platform is not specifically addressing that.
Because I think about all the housing issues we talk about, these, right. You know, great cities, but people can't afford, there's a lot of people who can't afford to live in there, you know, even though that they work there. I don't know.
A lot of the premium properties may bring the actual experience to you, but technology might be able to bring a virtual experience to those who can't afford, shall we say, the real thing.
Great conversation. Joe Coughlin, founder and director of MIT's AgeLab, Al Rabel, co-founder, managing partner, CEO, Kane Anderson Real Estate. Thanks so much for joining us.
I want to keep going. What a great
day. I know.
We may just keep going.
This is Bloomberg.